I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith Sniff Podcast, in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
Stop laughing!
Oh, I can hear pigeons outside my room again. Oh, damn.
I can hear pigeons outside here.
Oh,
I'm sitting in the shed again, and it's wood pigeon central here.
They are the fluttery blow-off valve of a diesel engine that you just don't want to hear. You just don't want to hear it.
We had quite a few. We said last week we were going to read out some messages specifically from patrons, and we will do that. We've remembered.
Yeah.
But what I hadn't prepared or highlighted is the number of people who agreed with your stance on pigeons.
Well,
left some pretty strident messages about them in our comments and sent us messages. But also, of course, I'll not find this now because I didn't expect we were going to bring it up, that some people were saying that apparently on the Radcliffe and Maconey show,
yeah,
on Six Music, excellent show, although I don't listen to that as much as I used to, they'd got a thing about what it sounds like pigeons are saying.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'll read out this message from Andrew Evans, who says, I have to comment just to say Johnny is completely right about the oral displeasure of pigeons. I recently moved back up to Scotland, and a few of the fuckers have decided that the roof above my bedroom shall be the epicentre of pigeon shit talk. At this time of year, the bright mornings mean they start at 4:30 a.m, and they sound just like my phone on vibrate. It's not just what comes out of their beaks either. I had to move my car as they produced so much shit, and within a week of living here, the bastards had got me with a headshot.
Oh,
Richard, the next time you're out of the country, can I borrow your dog? Yeah, but I don't know. This should be much help.
What, for the pigeons? Or
for the
just
pigeons, yeah. Right, I mean, okay. She'll chase a pigeon if it's on the ground, but... Yeah, Malcolm pigeons. Dale says, when I hear pigeons, it sounds like they're saying, you're far too stupid.
You're far too stupid. You're far too stupid. You're far too stupid.
All right, try this one on for size. Simon Smythe says, a wood pigeon says, take two cows, Henry, take two cows.
Take two cows? What's this coming to?
Well,
wow, that's amazing. I mean, look, pigeons, I don't want them all dead or anything like that. I just think that their noise, it needs work. I'd love, though.
Can you hear that? Can you hear the one that's just, like, sitting above the roof here?
Yeah, we've got the idiots.
It's stopped now, hasn't it, idiot? Someone calling themselves Panda says, any Six Music Radmack show listeners know that wood pigeons say, my toe hurts, Betty. And collared doves sound like sad United fans, a slow, morose, United, United.
Oh, yeah, they do. They do. That's true. That works.
Simon Smythe adds that a magpie makes a sound like a rattling box of matches, which is interesting.
Oh, yeah, it does. Oh, that's brilliant. I was being trolled by a pair this morning who were sitting in the cherry tree that I've been strategically picking cherries out of for the last three nights. And my daughter's been selling them for some pocket money. And they're amazing spec cherries. And the wasps haven't got them. And I thought the crows hadn't spied them yet. But oh, two wise magpies must have been there since dawn. Dining out on them. I hope they've got chronic diarrhoea tonight.
Oh, my God.
Imagine they've just had a belly full of really
the
sweet cherries.
The less spotted berry feast bird turd is
dirty.
Extraordinary, isn't it? As you go, some bird or other has got into, like, some blackberries or something and then left.
Oh, yeah.
A sort of fruits of the forest yogurt-coloured stain on your car.
Yeah.
Or someone's just been flicking fruits of the forest yogurt at your car. I don't know. It could be that. But
you know, I've not had a fruit of the forest yogurt for ages. I'm trying to wonder how many fruits live in British forests. I just don't know.
I would say your classic fruits of the forest lineup surely is blackberries.
Yeah, I think
raspberries,
so.
Raspberries.
Yeah.
Currants.
Currants. Yeah, more robust, I think.
What else, mate? Do they put strawberries in? I don't think they do put strawberries in there.
In forests, I nearly said forests of the ocean. That doesn't mean anything. That's like a psychedelic. That's like
the
a psychedelic.
Fruits of the ocean is like oysters and stuff.
Yeah, fruits de mer and all that. Fruits de mer.
Or Frutti di Bosco, as I discovered that fruits of the forest yogurt is called in Italy.
What? Hey?
Don't ask me how I know that. It's just one of those things. Okay, so according to this, raspberries, red currants, black currants, blueberries and blackberries.
Fruits of the forest.
You're listening to Britain's number one car podcast.
Yeah, what about fruits of the forest stage? And it would be a highlight reel. It would be a highlight reel of rally. Wouldn't that be quite nice? It'd be quite nice, wouldn't it?
In the 90s, that would have been a DVD.
It would have been a DVD or even a VHS, but you got an you got a selection of fruit corners that came with it free. So you could sit for like a solid 2 hours watching, I don't know, 80s rally forest action, but just gorging yourself on fruit corners and those other ones that I can't remember the name of. What are they called? They're brilliant. Mullers.
Mullers.
No, there's another name. They're really good. The ones that are sort of natural vanilla. I'm quite addicted to those.
They've got a foldy over corner?
No, there's not a fruit. Do they still make fruit corners? I've not seen the folding corner for ages.
I think they do, but it felt like the range went out of control because they started putting other things in there. Like you could get ones with
chocolate
like little Maltesers.
Yeah, yes. just staffed. What's that about? That's just staffed,
now,
isn't it?
I feel our listenership is broad and clever. Mm-hmm. And whenever we raise questions like this, we get answers. So I'm going to pose this one
to the listeners.
Is the fruit corner a work of genius on the part of Müller because it lowers their production costs? Because they can just sell a pot of vanilla yogurt and then put some other stuff in the other side. They don't have to have a mixing machine. Because I've never seen the point of the fruit corner. It's like you're just going to dump the stuff into the yogurt.
Exactly. You're just going to put
it in. Why
is it
not pre-dumped?
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
I wonder if it's a cost-saving thing, whether it's actually a work of manufacturing genius from the yogurt industry. Because you could just go, massive vat of vanilla yogurt, squirty machine puts it in, and then another machine decides what it's going to put into the thing, and then it just labels it appropriately.
Of course, you know how they invented the fruit corner, don't you?
I don't.
Touring car driver Ivan Müller obviously likes corners because a circuit racer, and he just kept shouting one day over the sort of like the speaker system, corner, 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 when he was learning a track that he wasn't familiar with, and some PR person somewhere went, Müller corner, that's it, let's do it. He's quite a fruity driver, so he probably enjoys culinary delights. Maybe more so than a British driver. Although Plato's got a very broad palate, but you can't have Müller and Plato in the same room. And a Plato corner doesn't sound... It sounds more like a wrestling move than a
way of applying an undersheet to a bed.
Oh, that's right, the Plato corner.
Lovely, neat Plato corners on that bed. I wonder if Ivan Müller, when folding over the saucy or cornflaky bit on a Müller yogurt, would refer to it as clipping the apex or something like that. It just,
that's
just right. Going to clip the apex. You mean dump the fruit compote into the vanilla
into
yogurt.
And then mix it in. Do you ever, when you mix these things in, do you ever create your favourite race circuit? Has anyone else done that? So you basically wipe the jam into a rough Silverstone or an approximate Cadwell.
It's really difficult because you're working in a fairly limited...
Oh hell yeah!
Like those people who draw like beautiful maps of I don't know, the Southern Hemisphere on a grain of rice,
or baristas that they get arty with the froth and the coffee on the top.
Yes,
and I quite like seeing some of that. I mean, we've all seen various ones, but I wonder if anyone does racetracks out there. I'm sure the Nürburgring has a barista who does an extremely complicated, I'm sure it'll be a laser cut template where they just tap some cocoa powder or whatever it is through it. Oh, that'd be quite cool. Or even cinnamon, as you know, Richard, I'm a keen fan of cinnamon powder on my coffee.
Yes. I've never met anyone who will just have a bit of cinnamon just tapped into a normal filter coffee.
I asked for some cinnamon to be tapped into a coffee the other day, right? And they misheard me and they gave it, I would say, three very large palm pumps of that syrup.
Oh my God.
You know, it's cinnamon flavoured syrup. Honestly,
yes.
I gave the coffee away. I didn't want it. It was awful. It ruined it. It absolutely ruined it. It just turned it into a children's soft drink.
This is not in any way surprising. It sounds also too much cinnamon is like, it's like being gassed, isn't it? It's just, if you can't breathe through too much cinnamon.
Makes me feel adult and sophisticated, though. I quite like that about it. Mm. On that side now, of things.
Before we get on to some patrons' messages and questions, I think when we did some questions before, at some point somewhere, we were asked, what's the one car you regret selling?
Yeah.
And I can't remember what your answer was. Or you didn't have one, you had lots.
Yeah, there have been regrets. I've had a few. The two cars that spring to mind is the Polski Fiat that I had that you travelled in when we had minor brake failure.
Really? Did you regret selling that?
Yeah, because I don't think I'd ever find a better condition one. It was just so nice. It was just one of those things that kind of needed nothing apart from just getting in and enjoying. I do regret
brakes.
That. Brakes maybe. Was good. Yeah, perhaps maybe a master cylinder. But apart from minor issues like that. And the other car was obviously the Honda Insight, which I've sold and I have consequently bought back. So I've got that back under the wing. Under the Smith wing now, and that one's nice. Apart from the fact that I got a sticky caliper on it, which is deeply annoying when I've just replaced the brakes on it. It's like I'm being haunted by brakes because I've called my show The Late Brake Show, and every classic car in the last year has had brake issues, and it's haunting me. And I've got to say, I'm really pissing bored of brakes now on cars. I'm really bored. I'm bored of brake fluid. I'm bored of seized nipples, all that kind of stuff. I'm over it.
Is the Honda not drivable then? Or just
I started driving it to Caffeine and Machine when I had to do... I was there to do a little chit-chat the other week.
Oh, you did the thing with Alex Goy last week, yes.
And I set off in the Insight, and I thought, I'd give the Insight a run. It's a good run. It's also a fairly interesting car. And I got about, I don't know, 15 miles into the journey, and I could just tell the car, when I was accelerating, it was getting slower. And then I came off the throttle and thought, regen brakes seem better than I remember. And then as it turns, I pulled over and just touched each of the front alloy wheels, and one of them I could have cooked an egg on, the other one was stone cold. I was like, sugar. Back to the drawing board. So I aborted the emission and... I aborted the emission, and then I took an electric car, took the Kia EV6. So,
That made me laugh last week when I asked you how it went at Caffeine and Machine, and then we were talking about sister cafes, bars, whatever you'd call it.
Feuding bars, the cafes.
Feuding bars, because I thought there was cocaine motels. And aeroplane would be quite a dangerous prospect. But what did you suggest?
Morphine and submarine is where it's
at. An incredibly low energy volume. Oh, so woozy.
And no chance of going out and getting some fresh air to liven yourself up. Absolutely no chance at all.
The doors are sealed and the lighting is all red.
Dim.
And there's a constant background drone, and you've had some very, very hardcore painkillers.
Bit drowsy. And there's bound to be a heavy smell of kind of body odour, isn't there? I can't imagine a submarine. You know what? It's like a teenager's bedroom that hasn't been aired very, very much. It's just a thug. A fug in the air. Is it a fug, F-U-G? It is, isn't it? Fug.
Yeah.
Fug. It's a fug.
Yeah. Because we've talked about this before, when they open the doors of a... say a transatlantic airliner, the ground crew must get hit by a hell of a fug.
Oh, awful. On a long haul with a lot of mouth breathing. Oh, awful.
All those sort of air farts that you do when you're at 30,000 feet away.
What do you mean air farts? What other guffs are available?
If it's a solid fart, you're in trouble. No, I mean airline... Avio farts, aero farts, however you want to describe them.
Av guffs.
Av
guffs. Yeah, I like that. I know, an av guff, a real heavy one. Awful.
Yeah,
you could
but there's
knit
a lot
it.
Of that goes on. Because I think people go, well, I can just let loose up here. Because I think the cabin pressure has a weird sort of effect on the digestive system where it's, pressures change and...
Also
because you go, well, it's sort of background drone of the engines is going to cover any...
Yeah, any loud noise.
Sounds,
But you've also...
you've mouth breathing.
And you've sculled six spicy tomato drinks that you wouldn't normally have.
Why do people order tomato drinks on planes?
I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know.
I can't remember the last time I was in a pub or a restaurant or anywhere at ground level and saw somebody ordering a tomato-based
drink. There doesn't seem to be a connection, I don't think, apart from maybe the golden era of flying, and maybe tomato juice was expensive then, or Worcester sauce was, or Tabasco was, or whatever.
See, I don't like tomato juice, but I wonder, maybe does it taste nice in a pressurised cabin? There's something about it that cuts through.
Yeah, there is something about it. But there's no, I can't see any logical connection between air travel and tomato juice. It's like, I don't know, it's like going on a track day and everyone drinking Lapsang Souchong tea. Everyone would go, yeah. Well, you've got to. It's just the thing that we do before the race. You go, what? Nobody does this. Who set this rule? This is daft. Nobody's questioning it. They're just doing it. Can I get a coffee? No. You can have a Lapsang Souchong tea. Oh, what are they
no
like?
One's talking about it. It's all just happening. There's always some kind of weird osmosis that people are all doing it without even seemingly being conscious that they are. But the thing is, the tomato juice on a plane thing just seems absolutely twatting idiotic, because you're going, right, I'm sitting in an environment which could at any moment suddenly lurch violently side to side and up and down.
Oh, yeah.
Could I have a small flimsy glass of the most staining liquid on board, please? And you go, yeah, of course you can. Do you want me to put something extra staining in it? Like, I don't know, some Worcester sauce? Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
That's, I hadn't thought of it like that. The danger to staining.
Our mate Jim was on a flight back from Italy once, and there was an Italian guy sitting next to him, immaculately dressed in a white linen suit, and pulling it off, as Italian gentlemen of a certain age can.
Right.
And he hung his jacket over the seat in front before they took off. And one of the cabin crew came over and went, sorry, sir, you can't hang your jacket there. You have to put it in the overhead locker.
Oh.
And he went, and this guy went, no, he's white. And he went, well, you can just fold it up and put it on your lap. And he went, okay. So he folded it up, put it on his lap.
He's took right. off
in the air. Drink service came around. He asked for an orange juice, put it on the table, which is still, it's now folded down on top of his folded jacket. And then there was turbulence, and the orange juice toppled over and poured all over his jacket.
Oh no.
And apparently, again, I suspect you can only do this perfectly if you're Italian, that apparently he just sort of closed his eyes and pinched the bridge of his nose and just sort of went.
Oh, what, like a an instant de-stress just to simmer down?
Yeah,
and, oh,
like
that's
a sort of
brilliant.
Stylish Frank Butcher.
By the way, you just, you know, we were just trying to think of ways to describe the fug of long-haul flight guff slash mouth breathing. It would be called, would it be called turbulence, where you're on a... You'd be on a particularly volatile flight where everyone's suddenly been spooned some curries.
But that's what I was going to say. So imagine that must be horrific for ground crew. But imagine opening the lid on a nuclear submarine that's been underwater for, what, weeks they can do, can't they? Easily.
Yeah, I think they probably could do fortnight. Let's just say a fortnight is bad enough. I'm sure. If it's longer than that, I can't bear to think about it.
A capsule of...
Yeah. Just, oh, gosh.
Feculence.
It's like people that don't... It's a bit like people that don't really use the windows in cars. I found this out because, of course, climate control is so sophisticated. There's a lot of people on an average day where it's... I'm not going to say it's a really hot day because... then you could use air conditioning if you were weird. But what you could do is just crack a window and you'll get a bit of through air. I like a bit of through air at low speed, not on the motorway. I'm not an eco-savage. But it's just nice to clear the decks. But also, I know we've said this before, if you've been on a long journey on your own and you might have eaten stuff, you might have let a few pups loose... You do think to yourself, I think this car smells okay, but maybe it doesn't.
Yeah.
And so you do have to air the room,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just good manners to do that. If it's got someone else getting in.
Yeah, it's just good manners.
Yeah.
So, I often use seat coolers. Do you know these ventilated seats that are quite commonplace now, aren't they? I think the first car I ever experienced them on was a Range Rover or a Jag.
Yeah, my Range Rover's
XJ.
Got them.
Yeah. Has it? Do you ever feel like if I don't know if you feel like you've maybe let a few kind of parps go mid-journey, road trip parps, do you feel like the ventilated function helps with the airing process? If you set that bad boy going and crack a window or two an inch, you could get a bit of a Venturi Do you think?
I don't know. I always wondered whether those ventilated seats, because they're sucking the air away from your body, aren't they? That's how they're set up.
So the coolness is from sucking, not blowing.
Yeah, and...
Okay.
But where are they exhausting? They must be doing it sort of down, but basically into the back seat. And I've often wondered if you, you know, dropped a particularly substantial bum gust, that whether it just be blown onto your back seat passengers if you had one. I don't know. We have car engineers who listen to this. I'm sure one of them, highly qualified and experienced, will some time to telling us the answer to how.
I don't think they will.
Well, have they done any idea on this? You know, have they... And how do you synthesise someone farting in a laboratory in a repeatable way? I mean, do you have like a sort of, you know, robot arse that does it for you?
Do you know, I bet they've got, I bet they've got scented gas and liquids that they try and damage textiles or plastics with inside cars for longevity tests.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I wonder if they did it for ages. They were doing the sort of fake farts and then and it was absolutely revolting. And they suddenly realised that actually they could make them smell nice, because all you've got to do is detect the smells. Like, oh, this could have been lavender or like cooking toast or something like that. But we spent a fortune synthesising an actual arse burp.
Yeah, I think that could be a good thing. The R&D people need to pay attention to that. In fact, maybe they're using Müller fruit corners to bring it back. Maybe they're to test the ease of getting stuff out of car carpets. Because I do think car carpets...
Oh, my God. Those really...
The pile of a car carpet, it's been the same for years. Terrible. And it's not actually very convenient to get stuff out of, is it?
Well, you get those really puby ones and they're just awful because they trap crumbs and crud in them. And they're hopeless.
And I have to get down on my hands and knees and like try and... You know when you put the nice lines in, like a garden that's just mown in with the roller on to get the stripes. You try and do that, but you realise the more you comb it, the more stuff comes out. And after about 20 minutes in the same spot, you're like, this is going to be a day's work to do two floorboards. Bloody hell am I doing? But you don't want to give up. But yeah.
Funnily enough, and all that. As we talk about Müller fart corners and all sorts of stuff, somebody in the YouTube comments last week, a chap called Michael Bushell, said, my wife wishes to complain about the large amount of discussion on cars. That was in last week's podcast.
Was it car heavy?
Yeah, I think it was. He says she only enjoyed the bit about Johnny's scrotum. Can we go back to toilet-related stuff? Thank you. So, inadvertently for you and Mrs. Bushell, this has been revoltingly lavatorial today. I apologise to everyone else who didn't want that. Going back to what I was saying, though, about a car that you regret selling, when we were asked that, my answer was my old Jaguar XJR. My X308, sweet car, sweet, V8 sweet supercharged, car. One of the sort of, you know, trad Jags, very, very leathery. Lovely. And wood and cramped inside, but so charming. It was a great car, loved it. And
lovely, and sweet,
but I wasn't
lovely.
Using it, and so I put it up for sale, forgetting that TV's Richard Hammond had always said to me, if you ever sell this car, I want first dibs on it. And so when I put something on social media going, I'm selling this car, he texted me immediately and went, whoa, 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 don't sell the car to anyone else, sell it to me. And so I did.
Oh.
And he bought it. He didn't even haggle. He just went, what did you want for it? And I told him, and he went, all right, I'll pay that. And he just bought it off me. And then he wasn't using
it. Of course
he
didn't haggle.
Well, no.
He would go straight in.
Pocket money for him. But he, and then he sold it to a local Jaguar enthusiast. Well, I've got a problem.
Talk to me.
My old XJR is for sale.
It's for sale. It's come up again.
It's come up again. So I presume the local Jaguar enthusiast has got rid, because it says in the ad, owned by the same person for the last 7 years, and it's now up with a specialist over your way, actually, sort of Lincolnshire, I think.
Is it? Do you want me to go and pick it up for you?
This is the problem, isn't it? It's like, you know, you can go on about, oh, it's the car I regret selling, and it's like, oh, well, look, here it is. And it looks absolutely minty. It looks fine. It was in great condition when I had it, and it looks like it's still in great condition. It's been looked after. And it's great spec because it's black over cream leather. It's just nice.
Sweet. Lovely. Tasteful.
But this is the thing. When you're lovely. Suddenly confronted with the car you regret selling, and there is the sort of the tantalising prospect that you could actually buy it back, But it's a bit of a problem because it's up for 10 grand.
What are you going to do?
Well, I've just bought a house.
Is that more than you paid?
And I'm being slowly ruined by mending up my house with all the bits that the previous owner had bodged and broken. And we need a new kitchen and we need new bathrooms and we need painting. And
oh, do you?
Yeah.
So did you pay more than 10 grand for your house?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
And I can't...
So it's a right car, wrong time then, basically.
I can't justify that kind of...
I've had this before with an old car of mine. It's really annoying.
So it's a bit, it's just a weird feeling.
In fact, my Chevy Volt came up for sale 3 weeks ago and I got given first refusal on it.
Oh.
And I was very, 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 very tempted because I know it's been well looked after and appreciated, but I didn't have the need for another car and I also couldn't justify the cashish. So it's like, sorry, but can't. But apparently it got sold to a lovely middle-aged couple.
Oh.
So that's cool. I'm all right with that.
Does that make you feel better, though, that you think it's gone to someone who'll take care of it?
Yeah, I'd like to think it's a guy that whistles on the drive whilst doing self-valeting.
Mm.
He doesn't take it to people. He's a self-valeter.
Yeah. His neighbours, if he wasn't such a nice guy, his neighbours would be a bit pissed off at the Sunday sort of 4 hours of... as he's vacuuming out.
Yeah.
Well, probably because the boot carpet's attracted loads of cats. Just trying to get it all out. But, so...
I know I was going to ask you.
Mm.
You know Toka?
Yes.
Whenever anybody says Toka, does it just make you think of... you know, somebody heaving on like a bong, a really cloudy, horrible bong, and getting off their face.
That's weird, because I've sort of, my brain is able to separate the two things. I don't know why. Maybe
because
it's spelled differently, but it's odd. It never crosses my mind. Whereas what it does remind me of is, do you remember there was a song called Toka's Miracle?
No. Who did that?
They were called Fragma, I think.
Okay,
sounds like a sort of rude word.
Toka's Miracle.
Yeah. I need a miracle.
Oh, yeah, I know that one. Yeah, was that cool?
Yeah.
That's a cool track, actually. Mm. I'm going to say mid-2000s, or is it early 2000s?
That's a good question.
I think
early 2000s.
Yeah, I think that's when people are still buying aftermarket head units with dancing dolphins on the front.
Oh, God, yeah. No, I might even go out on a limb and say that that might have been like bang, turn of the century, 2000, something like that, because I'm pretty sure, or 2001. I sort of feel like, do you ever try and work out when a song came out by where you lived and what you were doing?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I can tell you when that song by The Corrs came out, would it be... Runaway, Castaway. Mm. Can't remember what it's called. I remember exactly what I was doing at that point. Mm. I'm not going to tell you. I remember it.
Was it a Mitchell and Webb sketch where, you know, there's that thing about everyone was where they were when they heard JFK had been shot or whatever, you know, and there's a series of sketches where this bloke's always doing something really pervy, like trying to shag a watermelon, and then his wife just shouts up the stairs and goes, John, JFK's been shot.
No, do you know what? My recollection wasn't pervy. I remember I was on the way to my first journalist job and I was in my Granada and both the back dampers were absolutely wankered.
Mm.
So I was coming down quite a bumpy back lane, you know, where there's quite a few busy undulations. So if the damping's a bit tired, it can't cope with the quantity of bumps.
Mm.
And the car was just doing this really pathetic sort of bouncing and hitting its bump stops at the same time. And I was just listening to the radio in the morning. I remember it came on. So on the one hand, really tranquil song. On the other hand, the back end of the car was just all over the place. And I was trying to have to fight it with the power of the 2 litre Pinto.
Hmm.
Yeah,
Pinto.
On that side of Pinto, I know.
Now, look, we did say we were going to read out some patrons' messages. I'm going to start with just a couple that relate back to things that we talked about last week. These are both comments from patrons. Daniel Parvin. I mentioned that guy who had a Ferrari tattoo on a bit of your hand that I don't think there's a word for. And Daniel Parvin said, I have a car tattoo. I've got the McLaren Speedmark logo on my leg.
Really? Does he own a McLaren?
He doesn't say. But, I mean, he could be showing his support for the F1 team, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Now, I would feel sorry for him if he was never in a position to get a McLaren. Really?
Somebody pointed out to me that the McLaren logo looks a bit like a sort of distorted version of the Star Trek symbol. Yeah.
I've often thought that.
Have you?
I've often thought that. Yeah. And I'm not a massive fan of Star Trek, but at the same time, it doesn't irritate me. So, I mean, who was the first captain? Crazy guy, isn't he?
William Shatner.
Shatner. Yeah, I mean, Shatner's more spacey than space.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Shatner. Just when you think it couldn't get any stranger, it's like, oh, he's taken it there. Didn't he build or design his own trike?
Did he?
I think he part-owned a trike company. I'm now going to just double-check this. I don't want to make things up for the listeners, although I have done it before.
While you're looking it up, I just want to read another listener. Jeffrey Smith says, oh dear, I have a car tattoo. It's the VW logo accompanied by a pair of checkered flags. At the time, 20-something years ago, I was racing a Mark II Sirocco. I was woefully uncompetitive, so now it's just a sad reminder.
It was uncompetitive.
Yeah. Well, he says he was woefully uncompetitive. I don't know. He's taking the blame for that. Maybe it was the car. I don't know.
That's really... Now, yeah, do you know what? The Shatner, did... He back in 2015 kind of time, there was news that he had a V8 powered steampunk style trike with two yokes and squeeze triggers for throttles for controls. Yeah, and it was called the Rivet. Apparently, it's a thing. Yeah, it's a thing. I didn't make it up. William Shatner, because he's an old guy now, isn't he? I mean, William Shatner I don't know if he has got a podcast, but it would be the best one. He'd be sitting on a high stool, wouldn't he, with a permanently lit cigarette that he doesn't even probably take a drag from.
No, it's just for the look.
It's just for the look, isn't it? And he'd look into the middle distance with a half-open shirt. Just think it'd be amazing. What? Absolutely love that. Love it.
It was all filmed as well, but it's filmed like on cameras from the 70s, so that there's sort of lights behind him and they sometimes wildly flare. There's a lot of lens flare used to go on in those sort of.
I quite like those.
Maybe the whole time someone's just playing a double bass as well. But dum-dum-dum-dum-dum, and then he'll just start up and go, I remember. There was a time when he sounds like everything he's saying has been taken from different takes of the same thing.
Oh, like a pre-recorded generic person's voice.
Like one of those, for inquiries, press one. But Shatner is sort of like that. He talks in a very disjointed way.
That's brilliant.
Have you heard any of his albums?
No. I don't know why I haven't. I'd like to. Are they out there?
Because he sort of famously covered Common People by Pulp, and it's a brilliantly bonkers version. With Ben Folds, I think, out of his five.
And Folds five, yeah.
But there was one of his albums, it might have been the one that Common People was on. I remember our friend Gareth Jones, of Gareth Jones on Speed, we were in the car together going through a car wash and he was playing it to me. And it was absolutely nuts. And there's this song, I'd say it's all spoken word but with music. But it's about how his wife drowned in their pool. Or was it his kid? I can't remember.
William Shatner?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I didn't even know that.
It's really haunting. I think it is his wife. Hang on, I'm going to have to look this up now.
We're just Googling Shatner now.
We're just Googling Shatner. Sounds like a euphemism. his third wife, Noreen Kidd.
She died in the swimming pool.
Yeah, she'd taken alcohol and Valium, and then she drowned.
Gosh.
But this song is really... disturbing because it's sort of I watched her at the bottom of the pool. It's just really dark.
Sugar. I don't know if I want to hear that particular.
No, it's not a jaunty listen.
I had a Patreon message and I was scrolling back from quite a while ago, back in May, a chap called David Marden. Hi, Dave. Thanks for being a Patreon. He said, any time you boys want to run Lemons, I have a seat for you two.
Oh.
Call me. And I'm thinking, that is something that I would quite like to do. We should do that. We should go and do Lemons. We should self-sponsor.
Could they come and do Lemons here so it's not as far for us to go?
Brit Lemons.
Brit Lemons.
That would be a great idea.
I don't know why someone hasn't, or maybe they have, I don't know.
Well, maybe we could take on the... Is it like a franchise? Could we take it on?
Yeah.
Maybe we could take it on.
Well, yeah, because Radwood's coming over here now, isn't it? Or has come over here. So it's like, it's all things are possible. It's
looking forward to them.
Thing. Speaking as we sort of were, because of William Shatner, who's Canadian, a listener called Michael, who I've reason to believe is in Canada.
Yeah.
He's picked up on our mention of Ford Crown Victorias last week. He said, I think this is brilliant. He said, my Crown Vic was a V8 beast that got abused daily. One of my near-death motoring events was in a Crown Vic. I actually got its arse out to 90 degrees left when going round a right-hand turn and almost wiped out a bus shelter full of folks, which ordinarily wouldn't be too much of a problem. However, my lights and siren were on full and I was racing to a gun call.
What?
It's like, wait a minute, he's a cop.
He's a policeman.
He was properly sideways with a full blues and twos, or whatever they would call it in America. Do they call it that? Or Canada? Anyway.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
My buddy was behind me, also going to the same call, and he laughed about it for at least 60 minutes afterwards. That's fantastic. But fair play to you, Michael, for the reveal, because I was reading it going, oh, right, he had a Crown Vic. Okay, yeah, he must have bought an old one. But no, he was an actual serving police officer, and he was in the middle of being the police.
That was brilliant.
He fully sideways his Crown Vic. So hats off to
you. I want to know, Michael, did he arrive on the scene with the windscreen wipers on number two, but yet it wasn't raining and didn't reference it?
He'd done a bit of flailing.
He'd done a bit of motorsport flailing. And then, but what about if there's other controls that are police-specific around about the stalks? He'd done a load of other stuff as well.
One that pops the boot or something and it's just flapping about.
And, you know, the public address system, so just as he went round the corner he knocked that, so while he was in a sort of state of correction he was probably muttering things under his breath like, oh no, for fuck's sake, oh no, and it was all on public address system. So the police were shouting at
the police. These people who get burps under stress. I actually know where the boot release is on the police spec Crown Victoria, weirdly, because after we talked about them, I was watching some videos by that chap who's known on Twitter as Furious Driving. In fact, yes. His YouTube channel. We talked to him at Goodwood, didn't we? And he bought a Crown Vic from the US and imported it to the UK. And I was watching some of his vids about it. And in one of them, he points out there's a boot release button. It's bang slap in the middle of the dashboard.
Is it?
Mm, cop spec. It seems like that's where they put it. So I guess it can be accessed by both driver and...
I was going to say ambidextrous boot control.
Yeah.
I do want a Vic. I know someone else has got a Vic. Is Zach Clapman, isn't he? The chap who does the podcast with Matt Farah, Smoking Tire.
Yes.
He's got a rather cool... Well, I think he's still got it. I hope he hasn't killed it. I know he tried to. But, I think, do you know what I might do? Maybe I'll see if he can lend it to me. I need to go to the States. Haven't been for ages. Should we go to the States?
That I've gone down a Crown Vic wormhole, but I have a bit. There's one on eBay, or there was the other day, in the UK.
Right.
So it's 10 grand, though. So it's like, God, if I had 10 grand, well, if I had 10 grand, I'd buy my old Jag XJR, but if I had 20 grand, I'd buy the XJR and the Crown Vic. I'll go have a look.
I'd bring my own Vic across. I'd enjoy the journey. I'd probably go over to the States and do what old school people did before the internet. You'd buy one, mail order, or as it were, or over the phone, and then you'd fly over there, get a 4-day return flight or whatever it is, 7-day return flight, and then go on a road trip and then put it on the boat yourself, like do a roll off kind of deal. That's what I would do in my very last year of production Vic.
Well, no. See, this one on eBay. See, the thing is, I'm really lazy, and I just like the idea that this one's had all its, you know, it's been registered in the UK and it's had its lights and things, you know, sorted out, I presume. But because you've got to get rear fog and things, haven't you, to pass the approval test? This one is it's a 2011, so it's last year, I think.
Oh, is it 11? Was it 11 or 12? I couldn't remember.
I don't know, but it's definitely late. It's definitely a late one, and actually, it's 11 grand. It's a lot, isn't it? I mean, talking of airliners and
it's a common car. It's a common car.
I bet a lot of ex-police Crown Vics, when they come out of service, they smell.
Well, I would replace the solid plastic rear seat, the criminal seat, if it was a patrol car, with a normal seat, because I just feel like the solid seat's a little bit too harsh. But then I would go for detective spec, like I said before.
Exactly. This eBay one has actually got a cloth back seat already. I don't know if that's been retrofitted, but it's quite interesting. And I learned some stuff from Furious Driving's videos about, you know, they were spec'd in different ways so some were used, you know, obviously there's the full liveried up cop cars, which probably had a divider in it, didn't they, as well, to, you know, screen off the back seat. But then some of them were just used sort of, you know, they were like kind of company cars for public concerns, like local councils, effectively, and things like that.
Maybe a fire service assistance car and all that, you know, police chief, fire chief type thing. Well, look, we can't talk about, all we're doing is whetting our appetites for Vicks, and we're not doing that. I was going to read out a very brief old Patreon message from Bruce Driffill, who is a regular contributor, Bruce.
Yes.
Hello, and I, it's a funny little message. It said, I once did a sprint at what used to be RAF Abingdon in a Nissan S14 200SX. This was the first time I was really pushing a rear-wheel drive car, and I went off on the last corner into some extremely tall grass. Thankfully, there was nothing solid in the grass, but the grass was so tall, I had to get out of the car to work out where the track actually was to get back onto the track. Which I thought was really funny. Oh, can you imagine that? I just don't know where the track is, standing on the roof.
Oh, man.
Like an explorer. I was on a track day. Yes. I'm no longer on a track day.
I'd like to imagine you had a small pair of binoculars. Oh, there it is. Good. Yes, tally-ho.
It would be, yeah, like some sort of Bear Grylls type dude, but on a track day.
I was going to read out a message from a patron called Grant. I'm going to get the surname wrong here.
Woolnough.
Do you think it's Woolnough? Woolnough. Woolnough.
It sounds like a pre-war car company that we've not really heard of.
Yes, yeah. I had a Woolnough 6, and it was a fascinating engine. Had a radial engine, actually, in one of those.
Lovely, very
smooth. Of course, they only made four. the company went bust. And Grant asks, other than Johnny's Viper incident, which I saw you mentioned on the socials the other day.
Was it the 4th of July? It was the 4th of July. It was my thank you, Americans, for being American.
Mm.
Yeah, I decided to dig up the relic of the Viper wiping incident. Which is amazing. I mean, it's only a photo from like 2005 or something, but it looks like a photo from 1991, sadly.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite sad the way it's dated so fast.
Somebody, in fact, in your Instagram comments tagged me and said, because I suppose the Viper wiping is you've spoken about this before, it's sort of your most famous accident. And I've talked a lot about how I wrote off a very early Audi TT, and this person tagged me and said, have you got pictures of your Audi crash? And I haven't, because it was 99 and, well, there's no camera phones. Well, there were, but they were CAC and I didn't have one.
No, this wasn't. I don't think this was a camera phone. This was someone's digital camera from the office. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have a camera with me when I crashed the TT, because I didn't realise I was going to crash the TT. I probably would have packed a camera if I'd known, because it would have been worth recording. Because in my head, I know what that car looked like once I'd finished with it. But I'd love to see if that tallies with the reality of it, which, you know, was that it looked like a drawing of a TT that someone had crumpled up the bit of paper and then tried to smooth it out again. There was everything was creased, but there is no picture. So, yeah, Grant asks, other than Johnny's Viper incident, brackets, yeah, not a dodgy nightclub night.
No.
Have either of you ever been involved in a press day or any other where a manufacturer's car was damaged? Then have you tried to hide it?
Oh, no. Tried to hide it? No. I mean,
no.
I've always... You can easily burn bridges in this sort of game, so I would always be open about any incidents that have taken, yeah, place. I told you about the one with the brand new Mazda 6 Sport that I had to drive down the Stelvio Pass for some photography. It was a German motorcyclist was coming the other way on one of the hairpins, and he cut the corner of the hairpin while he was on lean. He was leaning to the right, so the bars were down on one of those BMW adventure bikes.
Yeah, yeah.
And the handlebar was at exactly the angle of the door handles. He took both of the door handles off on the driver's side.
Bloody hell.
Just like a fresh razor going down your stubble on your face. It just shaved them both clean off. And they didn't have any spares because their car hadn't gone into mass production yet.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. So it was irritating.
Was it for a story? So you had to be, the car was being photographed?
I was actually doing an advertorial for Mazda at the time. So we had early access to it. It was a bright yellow car. I turned around and took chase because I was so incensed.
Well, the guy didn't stop.
The guy didn't stop. He just carried on.
Hell?
Yeah, and the photographer was up on the side of a ravine getting long lens pictures. Oh. He was like, I saw it all happen, but and I couldn't keep up with him. He'd just taken off. He knew what he'd done. He just went off.
Apart from that sounds like a nuisance, because then you can't get into the car in the normal way from the outside.
Well, no, we'd only just started the shoot. We had to do 2 days worth of filming only from the other side of the car.
Well, now, this is weird because, in fact, Grant says the reason he asked this question is his dad used to work at Holden as a photographer in engineering.
Oh.
One day, while taking spy photos, in inverted commas, of the upcoming L-34 homologation special Tirana, brackets, yes, Holden used to take all their own spy photos and release them to the press.
Did they?
Yeah. The engineers asked Dad if he wanted to have a drive. Now, my dad, being a dad, thought he was the bee's knees when it came to driving. Turns out ambition and talent aren't the same. He floored it coming out of a corner, got the tail out and whacked a curb, damaging both right side wheels and bending a few other parts. The only issue was he hadn't taken any of the static shots of the car. Easily fixed. Get a couple of bricks and chock the car up until it sits level and only take photos of the left-hand side. Still today, when I see photos in books of the L-34 prototype, I smile thinking what the other side of the car must have looked like.
Oh, my gosh. It happens, doesn't
you are
it?
Not alone. Yeah, this is what goes on.
It happens.
I'm sure I've heard stories of this as well from other places of incidents happening on magazine shoots and cars having to be photographed only from one side.
Now, letters from listeners via Patreon again, one of them. A chap called Rich Matthews. Again, I've got to apologise. He sent a message on the 9th of May. But he's one of quite a few people that seem to have contacted us about Steam Rally wrong-uns, as I recall them. we're just playing around. Like there aren't real wrong-uns at Steam Rallies, we don't think. But it's just
case by case basis.
I'm sorry, I've just dropped a large plaque of a silhouette of a naked woman that's on my table. It's one of those truck silhouettes from the old PC days of truck driving. This guy, Rich, has sent three high-res images of things that are at our local steam fair. Turn-of-the-century engines. Attached, a few pictures of our village steam fair from the weekend. First picture, small engine driving a tiny hacksaw to cut metal. He's put in brackets, if you use this, you'd still be cutting it next week. Second picture is of a local gentleman who is showing off his engines. And of course, he's sat in a chair. Mm-hmm. And of course, he's got braces. And it looks like he hasn't washed his shirt in some time. And then there's another one, which is always my favourite. It's, it's belt driving a on a wobbly trolley. You know, the trolley shunts to and fro because it's got such a slow idle. And it's belt driving a water pump, and the water pump is seemingly sucking water out of the bottom of the barrel and then squirting it back into the top of the barrel to demonstrate that it can obviously shift some water. So thanks for those. And we've had quite a lot of messages from other people about steam rally wrong-uns, which I do chuckle about because I actually love steam rallies and I would like to go to one this year, preferably with you. Do you know what? Maybe we should do a podcast from a steam rally. That could be a thing, man. Couldn't it? Shall we?
We should. Well, find one. Find one that's equidistant between our houses.
Yes.
Well, that'll be smashing. I've got a question here from patron Tom Mitchell, who asks a very simple question, but I think quite a good one. If you had to become a full-time taxi driver, what would you choose to drive?
Wow. Okay, so let's assume that it's a taxi driver in this country, and let's assume that the car would have to be new. Would it have to be new, do you think, or nearly new?
Well,
depends on the area.
Yeah, but if it was old, you're risking reliability issues or parts just wearing out, and that's going to affect your earnings, isn't it? Because you're going to take the car off the road.
I've mentioned him before, and I probably will see him next week, actually, my friend Party Boy in Exeter, who's a taxi driver. And Party Boy swears by the Zafira. He has a small fleet of them, but he also has he permanently has a gearbox on Recon Exchange. So he, if he has a gearbox go, he knows he can be back out on the road in something like 3 hours, because the garage who he's mates with, who does all of the taxi repairs and maintenance, he has them on speed dial, and they have a gearbox that's Recon sitting waiting. So he says if it gives me any jip, I just pull in, pretty much do a gearbox pit stop, and then I'm back out for the people coming out of the clubs and the pubs. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Love it. Yeah. I said he needs to get a quaife sequential into it so he could do some really vigorous cabbing. So totally standard tune engine, but with a really vigorous motorsport gearbox. That would be quite
incredibly
nice.
Incredibly tight, slippy diff on the front of it as well. So like if he has to do a three-point turn anywhere on a narrow Muse street, it's a frigging nightmare.
But Party Boy's a legend, because he'd be listening to some uplifting mid-90s house at the same time. So you'd get you'd get the full taxi experience. It'd be amazing. Yeah. Interesting. He'd be listening to that song that you were talking about, Toka by Fragma, or whatever it's called. Yeah, he'd be listening to that.
But one of the remixes that's a little bit harder.
Yeah, he'd have a trancey remix, I bet. It sounds like a sort of an old jazz singing lady.
Sensible answer, I just have an E-Class because they're really comfortable.
They are really comfortable. You're absolutely right.
And stress-free. But, I mean, the temptation to go, I'd just get an old Previa.
Solid shout.
Bottom line, then, just like 600 quid Previa.
And it will
chances
work.
It will, because it's Toyota, so it probably will just keep going. And and then you're immediately... or almost immediately up on the deal, aren't you? It's like you're going to pay off the car with a few airport runs.
Yeah, half of me wants to go Vauxhall Omega. I'd be a smaller town cab driver. I'd probably get away with keeping it plated somehow. But I know they've got incredible turning circles, and I think they still look good. So I think I'd go with a well-specced. I'd go for an elite spec of Vauxhall Omega.
You'd want the V6 though, wouldn't you?
But I wouldn't make any money, Richard. I'd be doing voluntary work as a late night cab driver. It's not really
Johnny's charity taxi.
Yeah.
Yes, but then the diesel's not as nice.
Yeah, that's annoying. Well, now
you could get that 6-cylinder BMW diesel in those. That's probably all right.
What about a Jag XF? Early XF, quite like them.
Yeah, not masses of room in the back.
No.
But yes,
the estate one. I'd want the estate one for extra airport baggage and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you've got to think of the clientele, what they want, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah.
What about a Folds? Would there be a Folds that you'd want?
Folds? Well, a Mondeo would just be pleasant, wouldn't it?
Actually, yeah, Titanium X.
Yeah.
get a real nice estate. And
I think also
titanium action all day.
Those later Mondeo Tit X's had vented seats in them, so you could put to test your
Tit X.
Well, imagine that's what it's known like internally as for. Sort of it takes Euro. A long time to say titanium.
That's just like an on holiday strip club that you drive past on the way to the airport, and it's neon light, and it just goes, "What's Tit X?"
You're in a rented apartment somewhere in the Mediterranean, and when you, for some reason, you look under the mattress, and there is just a flyer for a club called Tit X under there.
Oh,
you can't work out how it got there, but
yeah, Well, there we go. That's a couple of suggestions for us when we do actually get badged up and do the deed.
I just go for comfort and minimal hassle, because I feel like actually you just get such a terrible arse ache from literally from cabbing all day if you've got a car with khaki seats. And
yeah. Oh, did you? I know one that we should consider. And it came up for sale on social media recently. It was the ex-Irish... French embassy's Citroen C6.
Yes.
And it really attracted me. I think it had flagpoles on the front, didn't it? I think it had diplomatic flagpole on one corner.
I like the way that, though, it was being sold by the actual French ambassador to Dublin, who was hawking that car and describing it as, you know, trying to talk it up a bit as a legend and brilliant and all this stuff. And it's like, haven't you got more ambassadorial things to be doing than hawking second-hand cars on Twitter? But
no, I think France's activity is quiet in Ireland this week.
Yeah,
so.
I guess it's everything. What a relationship. What's the relationship between France and Ireland like? I imagine it's very cordial.
Yeah.
And there's few issues. And so being the French ambassador to Dublin, I mean, I could be wrong, but I bet that's a really nice job.
Yeah.
Sadly, one that neither you or I could have because we're not French, but...
Not French.
I suspect they rather insist that the French ambassador to Dublin is a French person, but...
But on the upside, I've never been to Ireland, so it would be my chance to actually go to Ireland on my first day of my job.
Well, it'd be worth going to France first and becoming a naturalised French citizen, and then you could go to Ireland.
That's a great idea.
First day on the job, right, anyway, so have we still got the C6? Because I was kind of, no, we sold it, actually, we just got a 308 now. What?
No, can you... Yeah, actually, I'd have a 508 estate because they're glorious. That would be my new ambassadorial vehicle if I was French in Ireland.
Well, yeah, because what else would you have? There's like, you're really out... They don't do big cars anymore, do they? Not for...
No, it'd be a nice Peugeot, because the Peugeots are doing good things right now. That 508, it captures my eye every time. Love it.
There's one down the road from here I walk past quite a lot.
It's a good one.
I always give it a good second glance. It's a nice-looking car.
Yeah.
A chap called Stuart Richards says, hi, Johnny Richard, you're supposedly doing Patreon questions for the next episode.
No, we're not. No.
No, you're mistaken. He says, I'm a huge fan of touring cars, and my favourite era, like most, is super touring. Which of the many super touring cars is your favourite? Mine is the Vauxhall Vectra.
Is it? The Vectra? Interesting. That is interesting. Well, I mean, I always think of the Laguna just because of Plato, and is it Tarquini? Was it Tarquini in it? Or
I think he did do it, didn't he? Yeah. Gabriele Tarquini.
Now, Tarquini is most famous for the 164. Was it the Alpha 164? Was it the
155.
155, the really boxy one. Was that classed as a super touring? I'm trying to remember. Does it predate super touring? I can't remember.
Oh, so I thought it was super touring, but then I could be mistaken, because...
Well, that's a really good-looking car. I mean, a lot of them are. Because I remember when I was 17... A lot of the modifications that you do on your first cars were inspired by super touring, so they had a massive influence on the whole Max Power scene and stuff. It's where the whole like get 17s, lower it, roll the arches, get a bit of negative camber on the front. What other car? You got the Mondeo, which Nigel Mansell used
to drive.
Yeah, the Mondeo
I liked. I was just to be awkward. I was going to, was there was a Mazda Zdos 6 around then, wasn't there?
Yeah,
I don't think it was very good from memory, but it was.
It was Matt Neal's first proper touring car, I think that was, and he ended up on its roof in a huge roll.
Did he?
Yeah, massive roll, massive.
Yeah. I think, though, I'm thinking about this now, my favourite Peugeot 406, I thought always looked good. And I sort of had a bit of, you know, a love for Peugeot because my dad was a Peugeot man.
Very good looking car. Oh, hang on a minute. Yeah. We're Volvo, surely.
Oh, but no, then didn't they? Because they ditched the 850 estate and they went to the saloon.
They did the S40?
And then, yeah, and then they went S40 for some reason. And that wasn't somehow as appealing. So.
I remember that was the one that appeared in the game, the Toka Touring Car PlayStation game. I think it was on PlayStation 1. All I remember is my mates at university were stoned and they were always smashing those into walls and pirouetting them because they had absolutely zero grip. It was really a notoriously difficult game to control, but probably more difficult when you've had a lung full of naughty can I buy. So
the devil's lettuce.
Yes, exactly. So I think that's what I remember about Super Touring and all that. I do love Super Touring though. Every time
it was exciting.
It was exciting, and all the budgets were ludicrous, weren't they?
Yes, so, and yeah. I liked one of the things I liked about those cars. You'd open the engine bay, and the engine would be about a foot lower and 2 feet further back than in a road car.
That's right. Now, another quick Patreon thing from a long time ago from a lovely guy who supports us called Nathan Henstock. Nathan went, your point on MX-5s, Johnny, is correct. I'm 20 years old. I own an MX-5. I've got five mates who all own and have owned MX-5s. I didn't meet them through the car. I knew them all prior. I don't know anybody in my generation who thinks that they're for hairdressers. Truth. See? The whole hairdresser thing is a different gen. It's just silly, isn't it?
Yeah. That's interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah.
Good. Well, look, we probably ought to wrap this up. I feel like we haven't done enough.
Well, we haven't. Do you want to do another one? We could do another session.
Next week, we'll try and do some more. How about that? We'll do a few more. Because I really want to read out. It's quite long, and I want to do it justice. Not a message from a patron, but just an email from a listener called Augustus, who's in Lithuania. And I didn't realise we had any listeners in Lithuania. We do. Augustus is our listener there. But he's also just given us a little backstory of Lithuanian car culture, which is genuinely really interesting. So I'm going to read that out next week, if I remember, which I will, I swear.
Oh, okay. I was expecting you to read it out now, but you've left us on
it. No, it's quite long and we're running out of time. We're out of time. So before we go, I have three things to tell you. They are one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Fake Snake Show, in which he visits the homes of celebrities and attempts to hide a rubber adder under their stuff.
I saw a real ladder on my patio the other week.
Did you?
Yeah, really? I did. I took chase. Yeah, I did. I think I recorded it on my phone and put it on social media and all that.
Wow.
Yeah. It was amazing.
We were on the beach. We went to the beach we went to the Gower Peninsula last weekend. And as we went to the beach the first time in the dunes, my wife went, watch out for snakes. I was like, why are you saying this now? There won't be any snakes. And she went, yeah, well, there are adders around there. And we had been told this previously. It's a place we've been before. But she just remembered
the warmth of the sand.
Oh, it's taken the edge off now because but it's fine. We didn't, and no one got attacked. Okay. Johnny's real solo YouTube channel is, of course, called The Late Break Show. Many excellent videos on there about cars and all that. Second thing I've got to tell you is we have merch. If you like this podcast and you would like to wear a T-shirt or have a mug or a sticker with our name on it or one of the sorts of accidental
stupid
slogans
sayings
or catchphrases from this show, there's many to choose from. Go to thelatebreakshow.com, look for the shop area and follow the Smith and Sniff tab, and
we should become an Amazon amazing seller, like special seller, but we're not yet.
An official smell of this
but there
podcast.
Will be more merch coming forthwith. You'll give away the trade secrets, hideous man. How dare you? I shall snap the key off in your lock if you say that.
Yeah. And the third thing I've got to tell you is we're all familiar with the idea of proprietary eponyms. There's a trademark names that have become just the common word for things such as biro and Hoover. And
Hoover. If you're
an American listener, Kleenex for tissues.
Xerox for photocopier.
Yeah. What you might not realise is that other proprietary eponyms include fiberglass, which was invented by Owens Corning. And only they can legally call their product fiberglass. Frisbee.
Frisbee was
invented by Manly Toys, and that's the name they gave it. But, of course, everyone just calls any kind of disc that you lob about a Frisbee now.
Just remind me, I need to pack one for a trip away. That's a great reminder. Thanks, sir. Jacuzzi. Of course, jacuzzi. Yeah, jacuzzi.
The Jacuzzi Corporation. In fact, a descendant of the Jacuzzi family, Italian immigrants to the US, I think, there is a guy called Joe Jacuzzi, who was a head of communications for General Motors for a while. I met him. He's a very good guy.
Anyway. I'm a mate. I really now I'm thinking to myself. Actually, I don't know what I'm thinking. It's time for me to go to bed.
That was a bit of a William Shatner.
I know what it was. Is everything else glass fiber? Apart from fiberglass.
So, yes.
Because I refer to it as glass fiber, only because my dad, being an ex-engineer, is a precision man. He likes to make sure things are said right and done right. And he would always refer to stuff as glass fiber.
Yeah. Some other proprietary eponyms, while we're here. Kerosene is one. So is linoleum and ping pong.
Wow.
And aspirin as well. Aspirin invented
is a trade name.
Bayer, yeah, and there's a trade name, but of course, aspirin is aspirin, isn't it? We'll call it that.
Kerosene. Did Stellantis invent?
Just thumping.
Yeah, but what's the name of that track?
120 BPM.
Yeah.
Tucker's Miracle.
Tucker's, did you say? Tucker.
Tucker out of what, like the Street?
Not the defunct car company from America.
Oh, no.
I've got the Tucker's Miracle. We do like a Stellantis remix. Big fan.
I should do one of our theme music.
What about if it was slightly gabber? When Stellantis release a high energy, high performance car, it has to be a bit more gabber, doesn't it?
Gabber, I don't even understand what gabber is. It's one of those ones like sort of trap and drill where I kind of have a vague knowledge of it, but if you ask me to actually kind of
it's too much, that's what it is.
Describe it, I would struggle a bit.
Well, it's just too fast. Mate. It's dance music that's too fast for normal people, and it's not really got much finesse to it, is what I was going to say.
Yeah, it's pretty busy, isn't it?
It is.
Anyway. Right, well, this has been super. We will be back same time next week, releasing a podcast on Monday morning. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch, if you're one of our patrons, do it through the Patreon website. Otherwise, hello@smithandsniff.com. And I forgot to mention as well, we now have a website. It's not very good, but we have one. Smithandsniff.com is the website. You can go there. It's got a page of frequently asked questions. If you've got any thoughts on that, drop us a line and we'll send anything on answered.
Oh, sweet.
It's also got an OTSOP page, which you might enjoy if you're a regular listener, because it's a massive in-joke. Next week we'll read out some more of the things that you've sent us. Until then, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Yeah, thanks. Goodbye.
Why?
I don't know. It's because I had crisps for dinner.